This is The Crossover, an NBA show hosted by Sports Illustrated's Chris Mannix and Howard Beck.
It's a whole new level for you and me, Chris, this relationship.
Like and subscribe for the best weekly NBA content these two are capable of.
What does that mean?
Could be the best duo ever.
I don't see how you can beat that.
Here they are, Chris Mannix and Howard Beck.
All right, welcome back, Crossover. NBA podcast, Chris Mannix, Howard Beck. Beck returning after being away last week. What up, Beck?
What's happening, man? Did you miss me? I know you missed me.
No, I had some good quality Dan Wojcicki time, actually.
And you know, you can never get enough Dan Wojcicki time in this world.
So, you know, he appeared on camera, hasn't had a haircut, I think, since 2019. Insisted on showing me his baby monitor. There was a lot going on there with Dan Wojcicki.
Is he still rocking the 70s mustache?
No, I don't believe there was a mustache, but there was kind of a, you know, what I would call like 10-year-old mop top. Not like a fresh mop top, but like an old beat up mop top.
As only Dan Wojcicki could rock it.
Yes. But we did talk about some Lakers, and we'll talk some Lakers again as LA enters what could be a difficult stretch for them. Also want to get into a few other things with you here because it is a busy week. We are coming about a month away from the start of the playoffs, so a lot to get into. But I want to start, Howard, with the big transaction news this past week. And you don't get a lot of transactions in the final couple of months of the season, but the Bucks, they made some noise. They have signed Drew Holiday to a four-year, $135 million contract. That's a contract that can be worth as much as $160 million, the full max on a four-year deal. Holiday, of course, acquired from multiple first-round draft picks last offseason from the New Orleans Pelicans. Now, you know, the Bucks have decided they're going all in, Howard, on this core. Giannis signed to a supermax. You've got Chris Middleton signed to a long-term max deal. Drew Holiday now locked into a long-term max-level deal. This is the group. This is the core of this team. What did you think of the Bucks' decision to lock up Holiday long-term?
It was inevitable. Like, that's the first thing. The first reaction is, oh, didn't they already do this? Oh, they hadn't gotten to it yet. Okay, now they have. Because we expected it, right? Like, from the moment that the Bucks acquired Drew Holiday, given the picks and players that they had to send out just to get him, given the commitment that they were making to Giannis, who they, of course, signed to his max extension, his supermax, before the season, everything that follows that is about keeping faith with your franchise star. Oh, you need other stars. Well, we can't get the super-duper stars, but we can get, you know, we can keep Chris Middleton and we can max him out. We can get a Drew Holiday and wink, wink, we all know we're going to have to max him out with an extension because he's a pending free agent. And that's, by the way, one of the reasons New Orleans wanted to offload him because they did not want to pay Drew Holiday a max deal at this stage of his career. But, you know, it's a different standard for every team. The Pelicans are young and rising, and the Bucks are all in, need to win it all now because they've got Giannis. Like, so for the Pelicans, a max investment in Drew Holiday may not make that much sense. For the Bucks, it absolutely does. And look, Chris, we can quibble. Fans can quibble. Other teams and executives could quibble, perhaps, with whether or not it's wise to extend Drew Holiday at this price, you know, $32 million, you know, $30, $32, $35, $37, which I believe are the numbers of the estimates right now on that deal. And given he's moving into his mid-30s or early to mid-30s, he'll be in his mid-30s by the time this is over. Like, could it backfire? Of course. Could the picks that they sent out to get him in the first place backfire? Of course. That's not the framework. The framework is not, is Drew Holiday worth a max? Most guys in the NBA aren't worth the max. A lot of guys who have the max are not actually worth the max. But you do what you have to put together a team that can contend. And when you have Giannis in his prime, you have no choice. I've got some other thoughts on this, but I want to hear what you have to think. But I do think that there's no part of this to me that is either surprising or controversial.
No, not surprising. And Drew Holiday's played well in the games he's played for Milwaukee. I want to throw some numbers at you as we continue this discussion. His net rating is plus 11.9 with the Bucks. That's second best among their two-player combinations. Team assists per 100 possessions. Drew on the floor, 26.1. That leads The team offensive rating with Drew on the court, 117.4. With Drew off the court, 106.8. So that's a big number. There's a whole host of statistics. There's a whole host of statistics that Milwaukee sent me to exemplify the positives of Drew Holiday. But to your point, even if the numbers weren't that good, the Bucks had to do this because they couldn't risk Drew Holiday becoming a free agent this summer and deciding he wanted to play somewhere else. The market would have been robust for Drew Holiday. Maybe he wouldn't have been able to get that 4-year max contract from another team, but he would have gotten a good deal. And the Bucks simply couldn't risk that given what they have surrendered to get him in a Milwaukee uniform. They have Giannis. They have Chris Middleton. But they know they can't win anything without Drew Holiday in that mix. So what they did doesn't necessarily guarantee them anything, really. Doesn't guarantee them a trip out of the second round, quite frankly. But this was their only option, tying Drew Holiday up long term.
Yeah, and look, just because you've already got Giannis to agree and he's already signed his Supermax doesn't mean you can afford to start now dicking around. Like, you know, no, he's not going to demand a trade after the season if you didn't re-sign Drew Holiday, if you let him walk away, and if you failed in the first round or second round, whatever. Giannis is probably not demanding a trade. But you look, the idea is to maximize every year of his career in his prime, because when you have a special player, that's your burden. That's your obligation, your responsibility to that player. Maximize their potential the whole way. Now, that also means not investing badly, of course. Don't tie yourself up with bad players or average players and overpay. Like, you still have to be judicious. It's not saying just spend money just to do it and just because Giannis wants it. It's just saying that you have to make calculated bets all along the way. And we know, Chris, that in this league, the traditional, conventional model for winning championships is get LeBron and hopefully have Dwayne Wade and Chris Bosh next to him. And if you don't have them, maybe you've got Kevin Love and Kyrie Irving, or now you've got Anthony Davis next to him. I asked the model, two superstars, three stars. You can't, not everybody can do that. There aren't enough stars to go around, and those stars are, generally speaking, going to coalesce in the bigger markets or the glamour markets. The Milwaukee Bucks could not play the cap room game, Chris, and say, well, we've got Giannis and we got Middleton, and if we could just open up one more max slot, Bradley Beal's going to come here in a couple of years. Or we'll make a deal for Bradley Beal on the assumption that he'll resign. Or we're going to be the ones to get James Harden. Or we're going to be the ones a couple of years ago to try to attract Kyrie to come play with Giannis. No, I'm sorry, it's Milwaukee. There's no template for that working in the modern NBA in a small market. Well, we got the one superstar, others will want to come. No, that's why LeBron left Cleveland in 2010. They couldn't get anybody else. He had to go do it himself. So that's why you end up building with, instead of two other superstars, you have Chris Middleton, who's a perennial all-star and very, very good, and Drew Holiday, who's the guy who we all say every year should have been an all-star 17 times over by now, or however many years it's been. That's the alternate model. Be fortunate enough to draft a guy like Giannis, who you discovered in the middle of the first round and developed, and he became a two-time MVP, potentially three-time MVP, we'll see this year, and then get the best possible group around him. You can't hold out to build the super team, because it ain't ever going to happen, most likely. So this is their smartest path forward, Chris, and they've built a versatile team that's great at both ends of the court, and that I think is as good a bet to come out of the East as any of the teams we can talk about. As good a bet as Philly, as good a bet as Brooklyn. Everybody's got their flaws. Everybody's got their limitations. Everyone's got their caveats that we can put on them. It's not a given for any of them. And so what's a breakthrough for them? Is it making the conference finals for the first time with this group? Is it making the finals and then losing to the Lakers or the Nuggets or somebody? I don't know. I think as long as they make the conference finals, you can see that they've carved a clear path forward with a really talented group. And the downside is this, of course. They're locked up now.
Yeah.
As you point out, a lot of money invested in three guys. They have no cap room. They have no flexibility. They don't really have picks to work with anymore. So the margin for error is small. But you know what? That's what happens when you become a contender in this league. Every contender, for the most part, ends up maxed out, near or over the tax line, and often out picks because it's all about today. And that's fine. That's what they got to do.
Well, that's the uh-oh moment, right? if they get beat in the second round and they look bad, yeah. and all of a sudden you're kind of looking around going, we really don't have any real way to improve this team. We've traded away most of our draft picks. Our cap flexibility is virtually none. I guess we can get guys that might want to come on cheap deals to try to win a championship and for a role alongside Holiday, Middleton, and Giannis. But that's when I ask around the league, that is always kind of the downside. If they get beat in the first or second round and you're kind of looking around going, oh man, this could be a problem with this group. But look, you know, I wrote about, you know, in talking to John Horst of the Bucks a week or so ago, you know, one of the things he kept coming back to was, look, our record doesn't say we're better than last year, but we're better than last year. And I think it's hard to argue with that point. I mean, this team, I think Jrue Holiday is an upgrade over Eric Bledsoe, especially in the playoffs. PJ Tucker, I think, is going to add something to this team in the playoffs. They're a better team. Now, does that mean they can't get beat by Brooklyn in the second round? No, because the Nets are really good. Philadelphia could potentially beat them in the second round. Hell, Miami could beat them in the second round. There's just a lot of good teams at the top of the Eastern Conference, but I think they're improved from what they were last year, and that certainly is at least the best possible outcome to this situation.
And my final thought on this, Chris, is just this: you cannot guarantee yourself in this league that you're going to make the finals, or you certainly cannot guarantee championships. What you can try to assure yourself, if you put together the right group, is being a legit contender year in, year out for a given window of time. And that's what they have. That's what they are now. Mm. And more so than they were a year ago. And even if they lose in the second round, I'll agree with you and I'll agree with John Horst. They're a better team right now. They will be very, very good as long as Chris Middleton and Jrue Holiday, who are later in their career than Giannis is, and Jrue in particular, as long as they're still playing as if they're prime time players, right? Like they'll have a window here. The good news is this: they're in that conversation. That conversation really only involves a handful of teams, and none of them look dynastic. Like, as great as LeBron and Anthony Davis are, those guys are both out right now for weeks. There's no guarantee they're repeating as champions or even repeating as Western Conference champions. The Clippers, well, they've already burned us all once, but they're in this conversation, but that's not some dynasty in the making. The Sixers are not a dynasty in the making. The Nets, maybe? Could they? I mean, they could win multiple because they've got that kind of high-end talent across three positions. But we still, you know, we've barely seen the Nets whole, much less in a best-of-seven series against other elite teams. So let's not get too carried away with that. So my point is, the Bucks have a window here, and in the time that they have that window, the next whatever 3, 4, 5 years, there's nobody standing the way that you can say is far and away or even distinctly better than they are. Well, they will be in this conversation every year for the foreseeable future.
A, dynastic, great word. Love you. Love the use of that word. And B, word. Excellent segue, Howard, as we turn to the Los Angeles Lakers, who on Sunday were just clubbed by the Clippers. That was a tough game to watch. I'm sure ABC executives were not thrilled with having that game on their airwaves. As popular as the Lakers are, you might want to have tried to flex that one out of there to get something else in that afternoon. And now the Lakers are hitting the road. They have played their next 5 games, starting Tuesday night in Tampa against the Zombie Raptors through the East Coast. They come back home. They've got Boston. They've got one of those quirky sets, 2-game home sets, with Utah, which I think will be very revealing for both teams. And there's a strong possibility, maybe even a likelihood, that all those games are played without LeBron James and without Anthony Davis. All we know about those two is that Anthony Davis is, quote, a ways away, according to Frank Vogel, and LeBron James recently posted a picture on Instagram in a walking boot. So it's going to be a tough stretch, I think, for the Lakers. But I wrote on Tuesday, Howard, about this a little bit. And I guess my position is, does it really matter? Like, and I think you probably have a different opinion than I do, but I don't think it matters. I don't care where they finish in the playoff standings. If they finish 10th and have to go through a play-in game or a play-in tournament to get into the actual postseason, it's fine. I'm not believing yet that San Antonio or Memphis or whoever is going to beat the Lakers at full strength in a 1-game series. And then, all right, fine. You got to play Utah a little bit earlier. You got to play Phoenix a little bit earlier than maybe you wanted to. But I think this team, to kind of piggyback on what we talked about with Milwaukee, I think the Lakers, at full strength, are better than what they were last year. I think Dennis Schroeder makes the Lakers better than what they were when Rajon Rondo was there. I think Montrezl Harrell has done things to improve that team. Andre Drummond, we've seen all of 14 minutes of him at this point. But in those minutes, Howard, I saw a guy that can be impactful. I saw the first, you know, 5-6 minutes of that Milwaukee game. He blocked one shot. He contested a couple of more. He looked like a willing passer out of the post, which is, frankly, something I've never seen out of Andre Drummond. But I think he can be what the Lakers lacked when Dwight Howard left, and then some. So I think there'll be a lot of consternation about the Lakers over the next couple of weeks. I can't bring myself to care. I can't bring myself to get overly concerned about a team that I think is still going to be the favorite when the playoffs roll around if both AD and LeBron are healthy, regardless of where they finish in the standings.
I mean, I'm just twisted enough to actually kind of want to see them fall to 10th and then become the first team to ever win the championship from 10th place.
Great. Poor Utah. Poor Utah on that end, by the way. I would face them in the first round. Congratulations on the best season in years. You get back to being where you were before Gordon Hayward left, and here you go with the Lakers in the first round.
Yeah, that would be pretty rough. But the Lakers becoming champions from the 10th spot would just be hilarious and bizarre and would speak to this year. I mean, we're just like, we are living in really bizarre times. Why not? Why not have the Lakers win a championship as the 10th best team in the Western Conference by record? I mean, it's easy to say, and I'm usually the one who always says this, right? Like every time I'm on somebody's show and they say, well, you know, does this team need to really, you know, go all out for the top seed or whatever? And I always base this on like what the identity of that team is. If you're a young team that's never been there before, take the Jazz, for instance. I think it's important for the Jazz to have the top seed and home court throughout because the Jazz have not been a deep playoff team with this group. It's still kind of a group that's finding its way. Not as young as they used to be, but still some, you know, especially Donovan Mitchell. If you're a younger team, if you're a team that has not been deep in the playoffs, it matters. If you're a defending champion, and if you're a defending champion that has players like LeBron James who has seen every possible scenario in the history of basketball, no. Seeding doesn't matter. Home court doesn't matter. Matchups don't even matter. You're the defending champs, for God's sake. I don't care where they finish as a basic rule of thumb. However, there's a play-in tournament that has a lot of volatility built into it. So for listeners who are still, because a lot of people still don't quite get this, and it's going to take a while before like this is ingrained in people's brains because we've never gone through this before. So the way it works is this. The 1 through 6 are in the playoffs, period. But if you're 7th or 8th, you're not automatic. 7th and 8th will play each other in one play-in game. The winner of that game becomes the 7th seed. So if you were 8th and you beat the 7th team, now you're 7th. The team that lost that game has to play the winner of 9 versus 10. And 9 versus 10, that game, the loser is just out. The team that wins that has the chance to battle the loser of 7 versus 8 to get the 8th seed. That's how it works. So if you're 7th or 8th, it's double elimination. If you're 9th or 10th, it's single elimination. So this is where I start to say, come on, Chris, there is some concern here potentially, because if the Lakers are actually 9th or 10th and you go into a game against, I don't know, like the Grizzlies, like Ja Morant might just explode one night, right?
Someone's getting healthy, getting healthy themselves. Jaren Jackson,
yes,
on the way back.
So not your average 9th or 10th place team, the Memphis Grizzlies, right? The Warriors might be that team. You want to take a chance with a coin flip game, win or go home, and Steph Curry just has one of those crazy nights? Like, there's some risk in being in a single elimination position. Now, even if you're 7th or 8th as the Lakers, you lose the one game, and now you are in single elimination versus 9 versus 10. And that team might be, again, the Warriors, the Grizzlies, or somebody. If you win that first game, then all the drama that I'm talking about is gone, right? If you're 7th or 8th and you win that game, now you're guaranteed and you're in. But there's all these other scenarios where one bad call, one ankle twist in the first quarter, one bad shooting night, whatever it may be, and suddenly you're out and you're not even a playoff team. Like, I know that that's not likely, Chris, and you're right, and I lean that direction that it's probably no big deal that the Lakers are missing these guys for all this time and that they're going to fall in the standings. But this is not a normal year. In a normal year, and actually or any year with without the play-in tournament, if they they fell to seventh, who cares? They fell to eighth, who cares? But seventh through tenth in this format, I just think that all of a sudden you're playing with fire.
Do you think there's a part of LeBron James that wants this? Like, he's never going to be able to catch Jordan in the eyes of many people. He's never going to be able to catch Kobe in the eyes of many people. His finals record is what it is, even though you and I both know it's not fair to just look at him strictly by the numbers. You have to look at context when it comes to those numbers. But, Howard, no eighth seed has ever won a championship. The closest that it ever came was the Knicks back in that lockout shortened season. Certainly no 10 seed has ever won a championship, and that would be unique. I just got to think that, look, there's got to be a part of LeBron. Like, knowing you're not going to get home court advantage, most likely not going to get home court advantage in the first round, and knowing that home court advantage, regardless of the evolution of this country in the next 3 months, probably not going to be what it usually is. It's got to be a part of LeBron James says, look, I just accomplished arguably the most difficult championship ever won. Doing it in the bubble, locked in, can't go home, can't see family, one location, a difficult experience mentally and physically. I just accomplished that. Now I can accomplish this. I can be the first 10 seed, or at the very least 8 seed, to win an NBA championship. I don't know LeBron, and I don't certainly claim to understand the thinking of a man as talented as he is, but I got to believe that would be just such a feather in his cap that would inch him further along in the greatest of all time discussion than winning a championship again this year as the number one seed.
Well, I mean, he's kind of told this himself, actually, because he has said, I think I've won the two hardest championships. He came back from 3-1, which nobody had ever done, to win in 2016 with the Cavaliers against a Warriors team that was incredibly talented and won 73 games. Came back from 3-1 in the finals, which had never been done, to beat a 73-win team. So that is something. And he has listed that, yes. And he did list...
Trifecta. The little trifecta there for him.
So he has said, I have won the two hardest championships. I think there is a part of that would appeal to him. Plus, when you've already won four championships, when you've been in, 10 finals... when you've seen and done everything in one version or another, doing it a different way, the challenge of that, the just novelty of it, I think appeals to him. Now, that might not appeal to first-timers like Dennis Schroeder or some of the others on that roster who are like, wait, you want to do what? But for LeBron, it's probably like, yeah, that'd be fun. No one's done this. They'll have to we'll have yet another one of those all-time firsts. I do. I think that would appeal to him. I will say there is one other aspect, though, of this long injury layoff for him and Anthony Davis and for the Lakers. Those guys are missing a tremendous amount of time. We don't know how many games they'll have back together before the playoffs even start. Rhythm does matter in this league. Guys got to get back in shape. They got to get in sync with each other. It's mostly the same team, but Andre Drummond is probably their new starting center for the rest of the season, right? And into the playoffs. They've never played with him, Anthony Davis and LeBron. So there is at least, I look at volatility. Like, how many different factors of, volatility can you throw into the equation that might tip it against a team that otherwise looks like they should be the team? Those are serious variables. And it could come into play. We'll see. It may mean absolutely nothing. But I don't want to assume too much. And those guys do need to get back with enough time to kind of get acclimated.
Your Dennis Schroeder impression reminded me a lot of Tim Robbins in Top Gun when at the very end when Tom Cruise's character says, "I'm going to hit the brakes, let him fly on by." You're going to do what? That's what
I knew. I knew I was channeling somebody in that second, and I was trying to remember. Yeah, that was Tim Robbins. You're going to do what?
You're going to do what?
That's
Tim Robbins, the first 6'5" fighter pilot you've ever seen
in history, towering over Tom Cruise.
Oh my God, such a weird dynamic in that one. All right, a couple of things I want to get to. You mentioned the Warriors, and absolutely, they can be dangerous in a play-in situation. Steph Curry could get hot, and we've seen what can happen there. But right now, they're not playing good basketball. They're all over the place. They're committing a lot of mental errors, turnovers, fouls. They're just playing sloppy. And when I watch that, Howard, I wonder, Do the Warriors' struggles this year, do they reflect poorly on the overall legacy of Steph Curry? Because if you look at some of his contemporaries, the MVPs, even in their worst years, or even when they're surrounded by inferior talent, almost always they make the playoffs. And I'm referring to LeBron, for example, who only missed the playoffs once in the last 10 years. That was on that Laker team where he got hurt, and there was a whole mess of different reasons why that team fell apart. The Anthony Davis stuff, too. James Harden, on those Rockets teams, never missed the playoffs. You know, didn't really accomplish a lot when they got there, but they made the playoffs year after year. Do you think that there's going to be any kind of legacy tarnishment on Steph Curry if this Warriors team does not make the playoffs?
The James Harden camp would say yes.
Absolutely they would. He did it. He did it every year in Houston. Didn't always have good talent around him, but he did it.
Yeah. The LeBron James camp would say yes. There might be a couple other camps out there I'm overlooking.
Maybe even Kevin Durant.
I don't know. The Dame Lillard camp, maybe. Yeah, I mean, there are fan bases who, by the way, this might be the silliest part of where we are in the current discussion amongst fan bases, is that fans do this. Like, the Harden camp's got to tear down the Curry camp, then the Curry camp's got to, like, this stuff is just ridiculous. I don't think that there's any part of Steph Curry's legacy, reputation, resume, whatever, that's at risk at all. Not even close. First of all, there's context to all of these things, right? Like, the years that James Harden was dragging the Rockets to the playoffs, he still had a certain modicum of talent around him that, and look, I don't want to get into this. The Rockets fans probably will as soon as they hear this. But if you start comparing some of those teams that Harden had to drag, or that Russell Westbrook dragged in the first year post-KD before Paul George got there, those are probably still better than what Steph Curry has right now. Like, the Warriors don't have that much. And for people who are going to immediately rush to, like, well, he's still got Draymond Green. Draymond's not your typical co-star. He's not even your typical all-star. He's not a scorer. He's a phenomenal defender, granted an undersized defender for his position, but he's an all-star, multiple-time all-star because of his defense and his playmaking and his acumen. He's not your typical second star who, oh, the star is off having a bad shooting night, turn to your co-star for 25. He's not CJ McCollum. He's not Klay Thompson. So you can't just say, oh, he's still got another all-star. No, no. And by the way, I don't think Draymond Green was an all-star this year, was he?
No.
So James Wiseman, top pick. Okay, but he's 19 and he's still learning, and we've seen some serious, serious growing pains. Like, who's the second best player on this team that Steph's supposed to be leaning on night in, night out? The drop-off is pretty steep. It's not a great roster right now. And so, one, there's all that. We can't, every time a star misses the playoffs, immediately say it's an indictment of him. You got to look at the roster. The other thing is that Steph doesn't get enough credit, partially because of the finals MVP things went the way they did. I don't get caught up in that stuff, but some people look at that. I would just say this. The year that they won their first championship, Iguodala was the MVP for multiple reasons. I voted for LeBron that year, but Iguodala was named finals MVP. But Steph is the reason they're champions in 2015, and we all know that, okay? Steph is the reason they won the championship in 2015. And if Draymond's not suspended in 2016, they might have won two in a row before Kevin Durant even gets there, with Steph as clearly the best player on that team. So what are we doing if we're starting to like retroactively cheapen his championships? Well, he had Kevin Durant for two of them, and Kevin Love and Kyrie were injured for the other one, and he lost the year after that. Like, come on. Like, stop overthinking this. The dude has been the engine behind three championships, one of which was before Kevin Durant, and could have had another one pre-Kevin Durant if not for Draymond's suspension. So he's also in his late prime right now, Steph. Like, he's still phenomenal, but like, asking him to go out and be James Harden and go post a 35 usage rate and just do everything on every play is not smart, especially when you know you have Klay coming back next year and you know you have these other tools like the Minnesota pick and your own pick and Wiseman to potentially turn into something else before next season. Like, you're not really... This is not an all-in year for the Warriors. So, yeah, anyway, it's silly. If people want to use this season as a means to try to tear down Curry's legacy, they'll try, because that keeps some people employed and it keeps fan bases chirping at each other. But I think it's silly.
Yeah, and look, I go back to something a scout said to me before the start of the season when talking about the Warriors. He said, and I'm paraphrasing, but he said that he expected them to struggle because the system that Steve Kerr had designed offensively, in part, this is in part why they would struggle, the system Steve Kerr designed was built for two shooters. Like, you succeeded in Golden State because you had two guys that you funneled your offense through who could make shots. Steph, still there, can make shots, but with Klay's absence, you're leaning on Kelly Oubre, and you're leaning on Andrew Wiggins, and guys that have never been consistent, who are streaky at best. And I think that has impacted the way they play offensively. Wiseman's a rookie. I think he's going to be excellent, but he makes a lot of rookie mistakes, and he's missed time of his own with his own physical issues out there. So I think there will be plenty of people that suggest that, you know, well, this just goes to show Steph was never really on the level of LeBron and James Harden and some of those other guys that won MVPs during the 2010s. But that's probably a little bit unfair. I think next year might even be more important for Steph Curry's legacy. Like, if they get Klay back and he's, you know, 80-85% of what he once was during the year, Wiseman year two, Draymond still playing at a reasonably high level. If they struggle next year and wind up as like the sixth seed or the fifth seed and get beat in the first round, that to me would be a bigger blemish on Steph Curry than anything we're seeing right now.
Yeah, and I don't think that will happen, right? Like, I'm pretty sure that if Klay comes back and is remotely Klay-like, and Steph is still playing this way, and Wiseman has taken that next step, and maybe they flipped some of these other assets for something else, like, they'll be a better constructed team next year, and we'll see the best of Steph individually and his worth to the Warriors again. But yeah, I mean, that's a judgment for another day. But I don't think there's anything at risk for his legacy right now.
No, I agree. Howard, always good to catch up, man. We will talk this time next week.
Always a pleasure, my friend.